This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio City Council is slated to take up for consideration measures to increase public participation at City Hall. In late 2018, a group commissioned by the city's Department of Government and Public Affairs submitted guiding principles for future public participation efforts to help and to provide some guidelines along these ways. What do you think the city should do to improve transparency and open government? What tools or initiatives are already active now, and how can the community contribute to the civic process more effectively? Call in with your questions and comments. How open do you think City Hall is or transparent? 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at TPR Source. We're joined this afternoon with Jeff Coyle, the director of the City of San Antonio's Department of Government and Public Affairs, Ana Sandoval, San Antonio City Council representative for District 7, and Sherry Greenberg. She's a professor at UT Austin's Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs. Welcome all of y'all to The Source this afternoon. And again, the number to call in with your questions and comments about city transparency, 210-614-8980. Ana Sandoval, what is it that you want to see done?
Thank you for having us and for covering this topic, which is, I think, near and dear to the heart of a lot of community activists and as well as myself. I think that the expectation for engaging with local government has grown over the past few years with the proliferation of new tools, of technology. So I think we need to really rise to meet that expectation. We have a long history at the city of extensive public meetings. We do the bond input process is extremely extensive. The budget input process has really, really grown. I think there are opportunities for fine-tuning. And ultimately, the goal is to make sure that what we do on council and as a city reflects what the public wants us to do with their tax dollars.
And Jeff Coyle, director of the City of San Antonio's Department of Governance and Public Affairs, are we already doing that?
Yes and no. We always can do better. I think the councilman's exactly right that public input is the bedrock of good public policy, that you cannot make good decisions to benefit the community without engaging the community and getting the feedback of those who are impacted, good, bad, and otherwise. It has been a long evolution. We're continually trying to improve. For example, the councilman mentioned the budget. By state law, we're really only required to hold two public meetings at council chambers on the budget. But when City Manager Scully arrived back in 2005, she said, this is the biggest policy decision the council makes every year. We absolutely need to get more people involved. And so we started having meetings out in the community about the budget. And over the years, it's grown into the SA Speak Up brand and effort that we use today, which is based on a concept that we can't just ask people to come to us for public meetings. We have to find ways to drop into their busy lives, either through technology or otherwise, to get feedback that is meaningful to the council and their decision-making process.
Sherry Greenberg at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs. Texas has open meeting laws. We have open government, transparency, Public Information Act. Isn't that enough?
Well, that's the beginning, and yes, Texas has very strong, as a matter of fact, open meetings laws and public information, and that's a wonderful base, but it's not enough. You know, particularly when you are dealing with people's tax dollars and fees and other monies that we collect, we're just holding those monies in trust. That's truly what we're doing, and we must have sunshine, we must be accountable, and we must truly engage people where they are. And today, that means make new friends but keep the old. So the legacy ways that we have been engaging with people, we need to keep those, whether it's town hall meetings or public hearings. But we also need to make sure that we are engaging with people in various ways, online with digital and mobile technologies. And that is very important today. One other thing that I would add is that to be transparent, the information has to be accessible and it has to be readily understood. So just having a big data dump doesn't mean that you're being transparent. Sometimes it can be the opposite. People are trying to find a needle in a haystack.
So Professor Greenberg, you say that Texas has one of the strongest open records laws in the country, but hasn't that the Public Information Act of Texas become riddled with exemptions put in place by the Texas Supreme Court, things like the Boeing exemption or the Greater Houston Partnership exemption, all sorts of exemptions that local governments can use in order to hide what they're doing?
Certainly there are exemptions, there's no doubt about that. And I think that it's incumbent upon local governments to be as transparent as they can in as many ways as impossible, to really be engaging their residents. That is what is expected today. There is a different standard today, and this is where we are today, and I think that it's up to local governments to meet that expectation. Of course, there is information that should not be public, whether it is for security or your personally identifiable information or information dealing with children who may have been abused. Yes, there's information that should not be public, but I think that the go-to today should be, putting aside that information, you should be creating your information with the expectation that it's going to be directly available and also mobile first.
And the Texas Supreme Court says that the public information is not important when it comes to competitive contracts that cities engage in. That's why we never found out how much Pat Benatar was paid to perform at the Tricentennial concert. Jeff Coyle?
That's right. State law does protect some business-oriented, protections. Trade, in other words, if a proprietary is what I meant to
this
say.
This could have possible competitive advantage.
Right, exactly. That's under the state law. And I will say, to your point about exceptions, they are few and far between. We get about 45,000 open records requests a year. Well under 5% of that gets sent to the Attorney General for a ruling on whether it should be protected. And that's important to note also. We don't
well,
just
it
get
can
to decide
be protected.
If it can be. So the AG actually has to make that decision before we can withhold
something. The city
something.
Can release that information. However, it can go to the AG to find permission not to.
If we released something that should have been protected, then we as the city could be liable. In other words, as Sherry mentioned, there's privacy protections, there's safety protections.
For Pat Benatar and how much she's paid to perform at the Tricentennial concert.
That's a proprietary business exemption under state law. It's not something we create here at the city.
But you're able to do that with REO Speedwagons because their contract was different. So you can decide what's going to go in which contract.
No, actually, what we were required to do when requested about those contracts was ask those third parties whether they wanted it released or not. One of the entertainers agreed and said it's okay. No problem. Another one said, no, we are going to exercise our right to argue under the law that it's protected. And the AG makes that ruling, not us. It's not, we don't really care either way. We're just the keeper of information that.
Well, you can decide not to do business with people who don't want that information. Public dollars being spent for public events, for entertainment, is not national security. So you have to make those decisions. So Ana Sandoval, we're going to get more from you about how important is public transparency, finding out how public dollars are spent in the public sphere. And the question, if you got a comment, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Local government, local transparency, civic engagement. How much do you know about what's going on at City Hall? And Ana Sandoval, the representative for District 7 at City Council, is put forth a resolution along with some public support and public input about how they can shore up or make clear what the attitude is downtown for public information. Is that a good characterization about that?
Sure. It's actually, I'm going to tie it to the last conversation you were having about, you know, which type of contracts we sign on to. And that's ultimately going to be direction that would come from City Council, right? Like, what's okay, what's not okay. But one of the things that I'm putting forward first, with the help of the Government Public Affairs Office, is a list of what we call the principles of public participation. And these are really intended to set the tone, to set the bar for what is important important to this council when it comes to public participation. There are 10 of them. I came up with a draft. Staff helped flesh them out. And they are, for instance, that this will be meaningful. This is whenever we do something that has to do with public participation, it's not about checking a box or just because the state says that we have to do it, but because we actually want feedback and we believe that feedback is going to make a better product with whatever we're developing at the time. A couple of other examples are it should be convenient. You shouldn't have to jump through lots of hoops to participate. So a possible follow-up to something like that would be having validated parking. If you come down to participate in a city council meeting or in a public meeting, some people may see parking, paying for parking downtown as a barrier to doing that. So perhaps one of the recommendations is to consider validating parking for that. Now, David, you know that in general, I do not support free parking, right? You don't know that. I do, because it incentivizes driving and it competes with riding the bus. Nonetheless, in a case like this, I think it's important to remove the barriers that keep people from participating. Another barrier may be, well, there's a public meeting, but I just can't drop everything, leave my job, you know, and go listen to this public meeting. So we think it's important, or I think it's important that those meetings are recorded and broadcast in some way so that people can watch them at their own convenience.
And the city council meeting and things like planning and zoning, they follow that. Planning and zoning does not follow that.
No, full city council meetings do. Council committees do not, and neither do zoning, planning, board of adjustments. Any other committee meeting does not.
So Jeff Coyle, would that be an easy fix?
Yeah. In fact, we're looking at it right now. It's going to be something that we bring to the city council for a mid-year budget adjustment. That would be to be able to purchase the equipment and staffing to be able to broadcast all those council committee meetings, planning and zoning, board of adjustment, and so forth. It's we've typically, as the councilman said, we typically broadcast and stream the A and B sessions of the city council, and we get about 500 or so viewers on average. But in the spirit of transparency and making sure that people can watch and participate, even if they can't make it to a meeting, we're moving forward with the councilwoman's recommendation that we look at broadcasting all those other meetings as well.
Let me go to the callers. And this is Raymond. The number is 210-614-8980. Raymond, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me. I have a question for Ms. Sandoval. Before the sessions began, the citizens to speak sessions were being televised on the government channel. Ever since the council took over with Julian Castro, that portion of the recording was cut off, and the public was not aware of the issues that citizens bring before the council. For example, I have proposed 4 ordinances that would improve our city. And I've even given Ms. Sandoval a copy, as well as the other members of council, and yet they did nothing. They haven't done anything.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But the question is about the citizen speaking part of the city hall. That's no longer part of the broadcast.
So I think, Raymond, you bring up a really good point that part of the value in broadcasting something like that is that, well, A, it becomes a record, but B, it means that others who are interested in the topic learn the concerns, learn the opinions of other stakeholders in it. So one of the recommendations that I've put forth is that when we take public input, we should document that as well as the response and make that available to anyone who participates in the process. So if I want to know what Jeff's comments were or what Jeff's mountain biking group's comments were on a certain park improvement, they will be documented, and that helps me understand all the different perspectives when I bring my own case forward.
So Sherry Greenberg, professor at the LBJ School of Public Affairs, using things like the internet, broadcasting meetings during the on our public account, what do we call it, public access channels, all that, is this a way to increase government transparency? Does this work?
It's certainly important. Think of it with transportation. When we talk about multimodal, What's important is to use as many different channels as you can to reach people. So certainly broadcasting the meetings, streaming the meetings where people can look at it online. Some people don't get broadcast news anymore, but they can see it if you are streaming it. So streaming it, broadcast, having that citizens' communications part of the broadcast and the streaming, even the ability for people potentially to participate without being physically present in those committee meetings with public testimony or in the council meetings.
So what about social media use, Professor, using Twitter, being able to live tweet a meeting, being able to keep people apprised of how things are unfolding? Because these things, as I'm sure Councilman Sandoval can tell you, can go on for hours and hours. But if you've got someone who can tweet, this is coming up, then people can, you know, step aside and watch something that's of interest to them.
Well, that's certainly true. And, of course, the media is very good at that, at following these events and tweeting. And there are certainly those that you can know to follow. But you can also have folks who are with public information with a city or local government who are tweeting. And if you have everything available and open to the public, whether in person or via live broadcast or streaming, then members of the public, your residents, can be tweeting. And so that is certainly, social media is another channel that is available, absolutely.
And Jeff Coyle, how are you all plugging into social media?
Oh, it's absolutely fundamental. Let me give you an example. We just did a public input process on our innovation zones, areas of town where we're looking to deploy new technologies to solve problems. We did a tele-town hall meeting where about 22,000 folks received a phone call during this town hall meeting inviting them to participate. About 10% of those did. About 2,000 people stayed on the line and followed along with the presentation, asked questions, got feedback. You know, the prior question about citizens to be heard, that in and of itself is a very important thing for us to have, for people to come before their city council and make comments. But we're also trying to make sure that that isn't your only way, that you don't have to come downtown and attend a public meeting in the middle of your busy life to weigh in. We want you to be able to go on social media, to be able to participate in a town hall meeting from afar. And that's why we're bringing all this together under our SA Speak Up umbrella. We have a new website now that has all the open public input processes right now available on that website about our parks, about our airport system, about our the community's health priorities. If there's a topic you care about, you can pick and choose which ones you want to weigh into, and we ensure that that gets to the city council before they make any critical decisions.
Back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with Robert. Hi, Robert. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Councilman Sandoval, I hope you stay true to representing your district and the city. I don't believe that what you want to do is something that the council as a whole have legitimately in their heart to represent the city. They represent lobbyists, city hall insiders, developers, and if everything else is show. Us going up there and making suggestions is nothing but show, and the citizens truly believe this. Otherwise, you would not have lost the last propositions the way you all did. People don't believe in what y'all are doing.
Robert, thank you so much for the call. Robert brings up an interesting issue of trust and about how important you have to have trust with the public, and transparency and open doors is important in order to make sure, because once you lose it, it's really tough to regain it. So Ana Sandoval, a representative for District 7, can you talk about how important and why, and the connection with trust and what it is that you're doing here?
Sure. It's fundamental. It's really the basis of what we're trying to do here is keep that public trust. I want to say that in our office, we try to do that regularly. We have regular email communication with our constituents. We would love to have print communication, but that is, of course, much more expensive. And we have frequent town halls. We're out in the community. We make our staff accessible. So that, we believe, builds trust. And, of course, keeps us very conscious of the issues that the constituents are bringing forward. Now, I also really do want to say, Robert, I strongly believe that every single one of my colleagues on that council respects what their constituents believes and weighs that in their considerations that they make and the votes that they take. Now, the issue may be that how we make decisions isn't always fully transparent, right? So that is something that we can improve on. Also, what type of input we're seeking. Someone may come forward from the public, give us one type of input, and we may not always circle back and say why we didn't take that input. So that, I believe, is something that we can improve upon going forward. Because the last thing we want to hear is, hey, I gave my input and nobody cared, nobody listened. And the truth is that very possibly it was weighed, but for some reason it wasn't able to be integrated. So I think that's something that we can definitely improve upon.
Well, what if there are agents out there who want to create this distrust, and they are actually benefiting from causing distrust? Some say that might have been what happened, why these propositions, two of the three, didn't pass, or they did, they passed.
A couple of things. I've thought about this a lot as well. One thing that I tell my staff is you have got to keep our constituents, the people that you work with, up to date on what we're doing. In the absence of information about something people care about, people will fill in the blanks. And if they don't trust you, they're going to fill it in with something negative. So it's important to keep that trust and to keep the communication flowing. Now, especially with something like social media, if you have a few people who don't have the information and who don't trust you, which we know that there is a general distrust in government, then that person may spread a rumor, and because it's on social media, it spreads very, very quickly. So it is really incumbent upon us to keep the communication flowing and let people know they can come to us for questions.
So Jeff Coyle, how important is trust in what you do?
I tell my team it's our currency. It's when we have trust from the community, it gives us opportunities to be able to do other things. And when the community doesn't trust what we're doing, everything becomes difficult. And I will echo what the councilwoman says. I think the council, they have very difficult jobs weighing all the input that they get on all the very different decisions they make. I think they all, to a person, strive to weigh all of that input fairly. And unfortunately, when someone doesn't see the outcome that they want, and there's always differing opinions on policy issues, they automatically write it off to, well, no one's listening to me. When in fact, they've often been listened to and weighed against all the other feedback that they get. And ultimately, we elect them to make difficult decisions that they see as being in the best interest of the community. So none of it's easy. Transparency is involved in everything we do. We live in a fishbowl down at City Hall. Everybody watches all of the actions that take place. And our job is to make sure that viewing and observing is as clear and beneficial as possible.
All right, we're talking about local government transparency and civic engagement. There is a resolution that is going to the City Council trying to talk about the principles behind that and reaffirm these principles, because this is how you make local government work. And we just went over how important it is to have trust with your local government so that we can move forward on so important issues. The number to call in, 210-614-8980. We want to hear what you think about that. 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about local government and trust and transparency. With me in the studio, Ana Sandoval, San Antonio City Council Representative for District 7. Jeff Coyle, the Director of the City of San Antonio's Department of Government and Public Affairs. On the line, Sherry Greenberg. She's a professor at UT Austin's Lyndon B. School of Public Affairs. Now, but there are times when people in City Hall, as much transparency as you want, you do go behind closed doors into executive session. Sherry Greenberg, can you talk about why we have executive session and what's the right and wrong way to go to that?
Well, we have executive session because there are some issues that are of privacy or involve lawsuits, personnel decisions, or lawsuits against the city, hiring and firing. Proprietary information was mentioned. And so those are reasons, and there are others too if you look at the statute, that a local government, a city or other unit of local government, would go into executive session to discuss, as I said, something that is a lawsuit or a personnel issue. Economic development can be one. So they are outlined in the statute, and that is where you go to find out what is allowable as far as an executive session, which means going behind closed doors for consultation with lawyers and for reviewing potentially proprietary information or, as I said, litigation or information that involves personnel and other issues.
So it's very limited, very specific in what can be talked about in executive session. Things like real estate deals, personnel matters, stuff that you can't talk about in public because of privacy, and also lawyer stuff because they're ongoing litigation. So Ana Sandoval, is that pretty much it?
David, you know I can't tell you what happens in executive session. but I can tell you, yes, the topics that we discuss are along those lines.
It's pretty limited.
It is.
What happens when someone says, you know, I want to talk about this here property. I want to. And
well, if there
then
are.
Does the city attorney say, hey, Joe, you know, put a lid on it?
You took the words right out of my mouth. If people begin talking about things that really do not have to do with the negotiations and what allows us to have executive session, for instance, if someone were to begin talking about political opinions and how those weigh into a decision, then the attorney puts up a, you know, says, no, that is not allowed.
So, for example, if someone were to propose having the Republican National Convention in San Antonio, and then everyone said, hell no, we don't want those folks here in San Antonio, and then that would be a off the rails moment.
That would be off the rails. I mean, the appropriate things to discuss in that type of session would be the costs.
So what happened? Because some people say when the RNC was kind of talking about it, that there was that type of talk in the executive session.
David, I'm not going to tell you what happened in executive session.
Okay, so City Council Member Greg Brockhouse from District 6 has alleged that there was a political decision.
Well,
and Jeff Boyle.
Yeah, and I'll say this. There are no decisions that get made in executive session. That's one of the things that is not allowed. There's not a vote tally that takes place on issues. Any item that is to be discussed in executive session has to be posted and agendized first. So there, you'll often see the executive session posting, and it will say what topics under what exemptions are going to be talked about, and the attorney would cut off any dialogue that isn't. The councilman mentioned, and you mentioned, a decision about whether or not to pursue an opportunity. Those kinds of decisions do not get made in executive session. If there was a competition between San Antonio and other communities bidding on a particular event or something, that might fall under a proprietary discussion because you don't reveal for the world what your best offer is at that point in time. But ultimately, any actions the council take get made in public at the appropriate time.
I would add to that, for instance, any contracts that the city discusses in executive session will ultimately appear, and all the details will appear on the agenda, which is posted about a week in advance, available to the public, and those details are transparent.
District 6 City Council Member Greg Brockhouse said that there are secret votes being taken in executive session, and he says that he had contacted the Texas Rangers in order to investigate. Any idea where we are on that?
You'd have to ask our attorney.
Yeah, I don't know the answer either, but I know that the city feels very strongly that it follows the letter of the law when it comes to executive session.
And so now Brockhouse is also asking that the interview process with the potential new city manager be made open to the public as well. Those are being held, in executive session? Is that right? Or behind closed doors?
We did review the applications. We selected some individuals to interview this afternoon. In just a few minutes, we'll begin those interviews.
That's why you got to leave in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, so I'll make this quick. of eight candidates. The There will be 8 closed-door interviews, and then the second round, if we have 2 to 3 finalists after that, there will be a portion that will be public. Each of those individuals will be allowed to state their case. I believe it's possible to have some questions in public. I think the public is probably very curious about how some of these candidates would answer certain questions. And I actually held 2 town halls just over the past week to talk about this process and to get input on what does the public want to see and how we manage the city to make sure I convey that when I'm doing the interview.
And Jeff Coyle.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, Dave, that following the council process of interviewing candidates, when a finalist or finalists is identified, there is going to be a public symposium next Wednesday, the 23rd, at UTSA downtown from 6 to 8. And right now we are fielding questions from folks through our SA Speak Up website. People can ask questions there. Also, if you're not able to make it, we are going to live stream that meeting as well. So like everything we've just discussed, there are portions of the process that are private to the council as the decision makers on hiring the city manager. But then there are a number of portions that follow that are public before the council takes any action.
If I could, I'll tell you, I really think part of this process should be, of course, public. It's a very important position and one of the biggest decisions that the council will make during our tenure. And the more important a decision is, I believe the more transparency we should include in it, even though this is a personnel decision, so there's a balance to take there. Nonetheless, there will be some tough questions, and we want the candidates to answer candidly. So if a candidate wants to talk about what they might do differently from how the city is currently managed, we want them to feel comfortable telling us that. And that could be very difficult to say in public if all your coworkers are going to hear that and it might affect morale in some way. So we want them to feel comfortable giving us a candid answer as well.
Are you able to meet individually with these candidates?
We haven't discussed yet. I don't see why we wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, seems like something we'd do. Let's get a voicemail on the air.
Hi, this is Cosima, and I would like to first thank Councilwoman Sandoval for her initiative to improve transparency in our city government and the ability for the public to participate and engage. I fully support her idea to provide some form of free parking for those that attend city council and city council committee meetings, and would like to suggest that a free via pass, similar to what the courts provide for those that have been selected for jury duty, also be considered. I would also like to suggest that there be a quantifiable metric included as a requirement for both city staff and consultants when hosting public input meetings so that there is some accountability for turnout at these events.
All right, so you're leaving in a few minutes. I got you for 3 more minutes, Councilwoman Sandoval, Councilmember Sandoval. So a bus pass?
Yes, actually, that was my first suggestion, but I talk about parking more because most people will drive. But yes, absolutely, I'd want us to consider that.
And she brings up maybe a quorum, a public quorum, but you never know who's going to show up for these meetings. If there's a big Spurs game that night, it can get pretty thin in the audience.
No, I think she does bring up a good point, right? We do invest a lot of resources when we go and we have a public meeting, and I think it's great to have a high staff-to-citizen ratio because you get a lot of attention, get a lot of questions answered. But it's important that we reach people and that people are part of that process. So I think it's going to be up to the consultant or city staff to be creative about how we draw people out. You know, number one, the type of meeting format. Number two, what about child care? That's an issue that keeps folks at home in the evenings or over the weekends. Or what if it's during dinner time and you want to make sure people actually have the ability to eat so they're not grumpy when they're in your meeting. So we have to think about these things.
So we got an email. Will the guiding principles laid out by Councilwoman Sandoval be applied to SAWS and CPS?
That's a great suggestion. As you know, we can't directly, the City Council doesn't directly manage those organizations. They have their own boards. Nonetheless, the appointees on those boards are approved by the City Council, and I do believe that is a conversation that's perfectly allowable and perfectly appropriate for council members to have with the CPS and SAWS board members.
But this is, this document, you're talking about that you really want to be responsive to the spirit of public information and transparency in San Antonio. And so this is not so much trying to, I mean, there's some things you want to change, like get the all these other commission things online and broadcast those deals and find some solid actionable things. But it's really, this is about telling people this is what we believe and you can hold us accountable if we stray?
Correct. We believe this is really the first step in beginning to make a host of improvements. The other ones will require budget actions, but this sets the stage for us going forward.
All right. Councilwoman Ana Sandoval, District 7, you have to go to your behind-closed-door meeting to talk with the City Council, City Manager candidates. And thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, and we look forward to hearing from the ones who make to the second stage of that. And 210-614-8980, the source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about San Antonio local government. How transparent and available to you is it? We had to say goodbye to Ana Sandoval. She has an important meeting right now at downtown, doing her job as a city council member, meeting with candidates for city manager. We have Jeff Coyle in the studio. He's the director of the City of San Antonio's Department of Government and Public Affairs. Sherry Greenberg is on the line from UT Austin's Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs, where she's a professor. So, Professor Greenberg, do other cities have these types of conversations? Is this something that you think that, or should they?
Absolutely. Other cities do have these types of conversations, and they should. We are in an era that is changing, and cities have to be cognizant of that. And so what was considered public engagement in days gone by is not today. We used to use the word public participation. I don't use that term anymore because it's one way. It means you just attend a meeting, and you say something, and you participate, and you never hear again. True public engagement has a feedback loop. It is multimodal, using various channels. It reaches people where they are. They get accessibility. They get transparency. They get information in advance, and they hear what has happened. And that is all very important as part of the process. What we have is our credibility, and our credibility and transparency are very important in local government.
To that point, let's go to caller John, 210-614-8980. John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I don't believe that there's actually anything wrong or illegal or untold going on, but the perception is a lot worse than the reality actually is. And one thing that frustrates me is this refusal from City Hall to address the perception. And this conversation's been a really good one because, you know, I can't fathom why, if you're on the council and you're going on a show like this, a lot of the responses are just, oh, well, you have to talk to the lawyers. Oh, we can't comment. There's no way that you can't get three or four little bullet points out of the lawyers to address this and still be within it, instead of just this constant loop of, we don't do anything wrong. Well, how do we know that? Well, because we say so, and this is what the letter of the law is. Well, prove it. Well, we can't because we don't do anything wrong. Just a little bit more friendly public engagement instead of shutting down whenever the tough questions come, and being a little bit more prepared for it would probably help the perception a lot.
All right, John, thank you for the call. Jeff Coyle, you're a former journalist.
Sure. I've been on all sides of this equation.
Yeah, so you know what it's like when you go up to a public official and you ask them some simple questions about something that people want to know about, and they tell you, I can't comment because of ongoing litigation. And you say, come on, man, you know you can tell me something. Just let people know that everything is all right. I mean,
well, I don't think the councilwoman was being not answering the question. I think she was being asked very specific questions about a specific issue and what was discussed or not discussed in executive session. It is actually against the law to talk about what was talked about in executive session. So it's a little bit unfair for her to be put in the position to have to try to answer that question. That said, I agree with the caller. Perception is reality. And what we have to do is demonstrate at every turn that we are doing everything we can to engage the public and take their input very seriously and incorporate it in. I think the stars have aligned here. There's been a real evolution of what we're doing at City Hall. There's all the technological tools that Sherry has talked about. And then we have a councilwoman who is intimately familiar with this and very interested in it. And so it's creating the momentum for us to make some of the budget asks that will allow us to do more and better. And I think you're going to continue to see a rolling out of even more opportunities. At the end of the day, and I just have to say this, engagement does involve the other party. And one of the biggest challenges for us often is getting the public to care and to participate and be a part of things. And so the councilman said it earlier, we have to be really creative about how we communicate things to people so that they recognize how local government affects their lives and why them weighing in on a particular issue or many of them is beneficial to them and to the community as a whole.
Another caller, this is Penny. And hi, Penny, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. And thank Ms. Sandoval for all the help she's doing. It seems kind of nice that something seems to be changing in regards to executive closed-door sessions. I wanted to mention, though, that my mother, Marie Seen Halpenny, many years ago, back in the 50s and 60s, would go to the city council meetings, the public citizens to be heard portion, and was protesting some of the closed-door meetings that they would have, and like the CPS when they would have their closed-door meetings and Bat Roost meetings, and even have her on tape when Mayor McAllister was there and said quietly, but it came in on the tape, "Oh, my God, Marie Halpenny again." But it seems like things are changing somewhat, and I hope they keep on changing over the years. It would be great to have a little bit more knowledge of what goes on.
Thank you, Penny. So there are regulars at some of these meetings, people sure. that you kind of become, and they've taken on unofficial roles of spokespersons for ideas and constituents?
Yeah, and I think, and that's wonderful. People who are following closely and are engaged all the time are great. What we're trying to make sure is that those aren't the only people weighing in. And I think there's a lot of research that would show that public meetings tend to draw people who are constantly engaged, who have the time to be there, or those who have a very specific agenda on the issue. What we want to do is drop into the busy mom, to the professional, to the young person who are not engaged necessarily, and ask them what they think, because the more diverse opinions we get in these processes, the better. And so one of the standards that we're requiring now of all of our public input processes at the city is that the same set of demographic information be asked: age, gender, the part of town you live in, ethnicity and race. And that way we can redirect our efforts to make sure that we're getting a more comprehensive set of opinions on the questions we're asking.
So Sherry Greenberg, talking about greater transparency and public dialogue is good in and of itself. But if you are interested in better outcomes with the city, where you are trying to make sure that the city is responsive to the actual needs of the taxpayers and creating an environment where you can have a higher quality of life and better job opportunities, does this take you there as well?
Well, many things take you there, and I do believe that transparency is a tool for that, but it is important that we use all of our resources to improve services and the lives for all of our residents, the equitable access. So this is one portion of that, but some very real issues have been raised. And one is that it is great to have people who are the watchdogs and are ever present, but we also don't want to just respond to the vocal minority. Public participation is addition, not subtraction, meaning you keep finding ways to add venues and to add tools for other people to participate. It is important to get responses from that broad base of the community, including those who don't have that equitable access. And for some of those people, they may not have the access to technology, and so they may use the traditional. On the other hand, they may not be able to come to those meetings in person, and so having that technology and that way to participate is of the utmost importance to them.
So, Jeff Coyle, you've talked about SA Speak Up Initiative. Tell me more about that. And is it working? How does it work?
Well, it has started with the budget. We're now expanding it to all of our input. But 4 years ago, rather than just having meetings and asking people to come to us, we started deploying street teams to go out to farmers markets, movies in the park, 5Ks, with small budget surveys to ask people's opinion on what they wanted to see the city council invest resources in, their tax dollars in. And the input has more than quadrupled over 4 years. We have a whole mix of access points. We have online digital surveys. We have those surveys at events that I talked about. And then at every library, senior center in the community, we have paper surveys. And we also distribute paper surveys to groups to get out to their members. So we're trying to break down any barrier that exists, including language. We do it English and Spanish, to get as much feedback as we can. And then ultimately, all of that is presented to the council. It was mentioned before the necessity of a feedback loop. Everybody who weighs in on the budget on the front end ends up getting an email before those results are presented to the council, with the email saying the council's going to weigh in on the budget tomorrow. We're going to present this SA Speak Up results, and you can log in and watch live here. And then when ultimately the decisions are made about the budget, there's a closing of the loop to say, here's what the budget had, what you told us, and what we've done to act on it. So we're trying to hit all those points and looking for every new way to do it better.
So just to recap, and I want to get a little more details about what's going to happen moving forward. You talked about how in the future that there will be public access broadcasting of things like the Planning and Zoning Commission and other commissions that are very important to San Antonio, but are not right now being made available.
Well, I when I say will be, it ultimately would be a council decision in terms of the budget investments we need to make. I would imagine Councilman Sandoval will be talking with her colleagues, and that conversation will come soon. But assuming we get the direction from City Council to do it, that is the goal, yes, to begin broadcasting the subcommittees of the City Council that just consider issues before it goes to full council.
Like public safety,
yep.
All these issues.
Intergovernmental relations, community health, that sort of thing. And then also planning, zoning, and board of adjustment. Historic preservation, those are all sort of real estate development related commissions that are not currently broadcast online.
It's also sometimes I try and watch these things online and people talk and it's hard to, they don't always introduce themselves. It would just be wonderful if we could just give people some etiquette, like, you know, make sure you say who you are when you, even if you've already said it like five times, you know, people may be tuning in mid meeting to figure out what's going on.
Well, we try to handle that with our graphics team. That's one of the few people said to me, well, it's pretty easy. You can just use a cell phone and stream the meeting. And we say, no, there's a production standard we expect.
Got a switcher here. And all those graphics, yeah. All those things going through there. Jeff Coyle, Director of the City of San Antonio's Department of Government and Public Affairs. Sherry Greenberg, thank you so much, Professor Greenberg, at the UT Austin's Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs. And we had Ana Sandoval from District 7. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.